Welcome to Pure Hustle Podcast. I'm Mike.
And this is Orlando, and we're on episode 397. And this is a themed episode.
Yeah. 397 episodes in. We are closing in on that 400. And, you know, just after 400, we're going to be into the summertime, right? Right after we hit episode 400, I feel like we're going to be like right in the swing of what would be reseller summer. And so today we're going to be talking about that. How do we get prepared for the summer? Because the summer brings with it different challenges, different opportunities. Everyone's always excited for Q4. Q4 is a great time. Q1 can always be a little bit iffy. You know, you got returnuary and, you know, all of the dip in sales coming out of Q4. But summer could be a really good time for a lot of people, but it also brings with it its own challenges. So we want to kind of go through what to expect, what we're kind of forecasting for this summer as resellers, ways to kind of adjust what we're doing to ensure that we're staying as profitable as possible.
It kind of cracks me up because you are so like rainbows and things are going to be great. And I'm going to come with the realness. And
Wait, you're saying that what I have isn't real?
No, I'm saying it's real. I mean, the reality with reselling is that everybody has a different experience, right? But so I wanted to just talk about preparing for summer, I would say, for the good and for the worst case scenario. Because this summer, I think, is going to be different in the sense that we don't know what's going to happen. What I can tell you is, you know, the last few years, you know, Mike and I have done so many episodes of we're in a recession and you know, inflation and all this. And whenever we say those words, people are like, oh, you guys are doom and gloom. And it's like, well, this is what I do on a daily basis. Like, this is my life. And so I have to pay attention to these things so I know what I need to do. Because if reselling, right, for us is a vehicle to something else, right? Like, reselling I do full time, but I also do a lot of other things. I invest my money. I have other side hustles that I do. But, you know, reselling is the main thing. But, you know, everything going on is going to affect you. Like, inflation is going to affect us. The fact that inflation has not gone away. I mean, I remember Mike and I were making episodes 2-3 years ago how they were saying it was going to be transitory. And we were saying, no, we may even be in stag. We had a whole, I think, stagflation episode. And sure enough, like, this summer was supposed to be like the golden summer of the last 2-3 years. Like, you know, inflation was supposed to be down. The Fed said they're going to cut rates. They're going to be the first rate cut was supposed to already have happened, and we're going to have another one in June. And now, because inflation won't go away, it's like at 3-something% growing. And hopefully you guys understand when the rate's at a certain rate, that doesn't mean that it's dropped. That means that it's just that the rate of its growth has slowed down to that rate. And so it's still happening. And so guess what? There's going to be no inflation cuts, which means less money for people to borrow, which means less money being spent, which means a lot of individuals are going to be tighter with their money. Right. And
I didn't read the articles like in depth, but, you know, saw the headlines as we all tend to do when we're, you know, on Google News or Facebook News or whatever, you kind of just pick up headlines. But there's been quite a few headlines recently about like fast food restaurants, you know, McDonald's and a few others. Mm-hmm. And Amazon actually had a big chunk in one of these articles talking about how like lower class, that sounds really bad. Those who are, you know,
well, paycheck to paycheck individuals.
Right. So those, yeah, basically they said the poorer customers are becoming much more cautious about eating out. So places like McDonald's and fast food places, a big portion of their customer base is going to be those who are a little bit poorer. And they're seeing that people who are on the poor end of the spectrum are less likely to go and are not eating out as much, you know, which is a kind of a sign that, okay, what does that mean for us as resellers? So, you know, we can get into the weeds about, you know, the inflation rates and the Fed hikes and all of those things. But the reality is, just across the board, we're seeing, like you were saying, people are being a little bit more cautious with how they're spending money because, yeah, if they don't know, if their jobs are not giving them increases to match the cost of living increases that people are experiencing, that means discretionary income is going down. Okay. So now we've said hundreds of times on the podcast, again, people will hear this and say, like, you guys are just complaining. Well, what we're trying to do is say, hey, this is the reality, and we know we can't change it. Like, Mike and Orlando or anybody listening to the PRSL podcast can't say, okay, here's how we're going to fix the economy. But what we can say is, okay, let's recognize what's happening. Let's see what that means. And then what do we do now as resellers in order to make sure that we can kind of compensate? That if that's true, if discretionary spending is down, then how can we ensure that we're still bringing in profits? How can we ensure that we maybe move into a niche that's going to still be profitable? Because whether or not people are eating out at fast food, food is still being purchased, right? So it not everybody is seeing a dip. In fact, there's going to be some markets that are actually seeing an uptick when it's like, man, a lot of these people who would have gone out to eat at McDonald's 3, 4, 5 times a week are now buying food at grocery stores that are a little bit cheaper. So they're actually seeing an increase in their profits. So just because there's, you know, a shift in the market doesn't mean that we can't find niches or we can't find categories that we can still be profitable in.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just want people to be aware. I mean, I look at unemployment. I don't know if you remember from Econ 101, the only time that the Fed will begin to cut rates if there's higher unemployment, because the economy has to be bad for the interest rates to go down to heat up the economy for people to borrow more money, right? So like our last report, the last unemployment report, employment's at 3.9%. Right. And so it's trending up. And if it gets to like 5%, that's really bad. But then the Fed will come in and they'll reduce rates and then there'll be more money in the economy because inflation will go down. So I want people to be aware, like if unemployment continues.
Well, actually, if they lower the rate, the inflation will go back up. I mean, they've increased rates in order to slow inflation.
But the hope is with the unemployment, less people have money, which means there'll be less money to go around, which means inflation will go down. Right. And then they'll cut the rates. But the problem is, okay, now what about these thousands of people without work? Are they going to go to eBay? Are they going to look for side hustles, right? And what about the spending that you're talking about? What's going to happen with that? So I want people to see that. And people are buying less. The latest report said that, you know, it didn't drop too much, consumer confidence in buying. But the GDP of our country, right, went from, I think it was like an aim of 2.4% to 1.6%, which is a crazy drastic drop. And so, you know, that means that there's less money being spent overall on a larger rate. A lot of that is the government. But I want people to understand, like, this is what we're dealing with. This isn't going to be like a normal summer slowdown where it's like, oh, you know, retail always prepares for this. Things are going to be, you know, kind of slow anyways. They may be even slower, right? And but again, I always say that with the qualifier of that's not the case for everybody. And so is it possible that if you're listening to this podcast, you're somebody that has consistently done really well? I remember, you know, Mike, you always gave me a hard time because I always said, what summer slowdown? And then this last summer, I finally had a summer slowdown. Like things were really bad. So I want people to be aware. Now, even Jamie Ioane, the CEO of eBay in the last Q1 earning results. And if you haven't caught our whole discussion on that, you can catch our live stream that we just dropped. He said on the latest call with investors, he said, we remain on track for GMV growth. So GMV is gross merchandise value. That's basically items that are being sold. So we remain on track for GMV growth to turn positive by Q3 or Q4 of this year, meaning that things aren't going to be so hot for the rest of Q2. Maybe things will get better by Q3. And the hope is that by Q4, things will go well. So you're going to have to find something, or you're going to have to find a way to kind of make it through that time. Because Q4 always ends up doing well. Like no matter how bad things are, people always find a way to get that Christmas gift, to get that item they want for Q4, whether it be for others or whether it be from themselves. But I don't know. What do you put in that one sentence that Jamie said? Do you think there's much stock to that?
Specifically about that we're tracking for GMV to go up in Q3, Q4. Is that
correct?
What you said?
Correct.
Yeah. I mean, that'd be good. But then again, is that different than any other year, right? Like, is that tracking, or is that just saying like, hey, like, because what we want to hear the CEO of eBay come out and say, things are getting better. The markets are getting better. eBay is growing. We don't want to hear like eBay is potentially on track to like be kind of like we've been the last several years, right? That is almost just like, hey, things aren't like we're not drowning yet, guys. Like things are, we're still keeping our head above the water, which, yeah, that's some good news, but that's not the news you want to hear, right? Like the news you want to hear is, hey, eBay is actually not just on track to grow, but like actually have huge growth. Cause yeah, year over year, the GMV has been going down, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're making their money off of ads. They're making their money off of those other things. And so if, yeah, we want to see it go in the positive, but then again, it's like in the positive compared to what? Like I sometimes look at, and again, I'd have to look at all the numbers to find out.
It was their growth, what they estimated. So
they said
it was going to be slower. And so they beat their goal of being slower.
Slower. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, because you always got to figure compared to what, like, because when you're looking at gas prices, like when gas prices were $2 and then they shoot up to $6 and then they go back down to $5 and everybody's like, look, gas has gone down. And it's like, well, yeah, compared to when it was $6, but not compared to when it was $2 not that long ago. So when we're looking at it, are they going up? Are they growing with their GMV? Is that like, hey, we've year over year have like the GMV has actually been going down. And so we're like going to get back towards baseline, but we're going to spin it as if, hey, look, there's growth, right? Like that's kind of what I'm trying to get at here is you can spin something as like we're seeing growth, but if the growth is because you're already in a huge dip, like that's still some good news, but like, you know, I want to see that eBay is selling more products on their platform this year than ever before. Like that's the goal, right? Like every year there should be more items sold on eBay. They should be making more money off of the final value fees because of the item selling, not because they've increased the fees.
Yeah, well, that's not happening right now. So if you look at their report, again, look at our Q1 live episode, but just a quick summary is they are doing really well because of promoted listings. It's their ads. If it was not for their ads and their lower forecast for Q1, they would be in trouble. And so, I've always made the argument that I'm okay with that because at least that makes sure that eBay is not going to go out of business anytime soon, that eBay will continue being the platform that people go to. Yeah. Do I like paying the promoted ads? No, I don't. No one does. Like absolutely no one does. Okay. But the reality is that's what eBay is doing. That's what is helping out, you know, the company stay afloat. And so, and not even stay afloat, actually be able to be profitable. And with that profit, be able to turn that into more innovation, whether it be the using of AI, whether it be, you know, hopefully one day we'll do the live streaming, whether that could be, you know, other things that they've talked about, maybe fixing one day the non-payment whatever issue, that it could turn to that. Now, with all that being said, there are people, I myself included, that kill it in the summer. Okay, last summer I did not. This summer, who knows? But you got to think about the fact that, like, if everybody did horrible in the summer on eBay, okay, that would be pretty tough because eBay would be struggling too. But their numbers, whenever they produce their numbers for, you know, Q3, they're not bad. They're not bad. Every year, you know, they may have dipped or may have gone up a little bit. But overall, there are people that are pretty successful in the summer. And so we want to talk a little bit about, you know, what does that mean? Like, how are you successful in the summer? That may mean, and I'm not going to talk about like what you should source or what you should do. It's more of like, how do you prep yourself to be ready for the summer? Because if things do slow down, well, you got to find a way to still make income, right? You got to find a way to hold on tight. And not only that, you got to be able to source in the summer for Q4. Right, because a lot of the good sourcing happens in Q4, and a lot of the prep work for Q4 happens in the summer, and so you got to be able to do that. So, be encouraged the fact that you can still kill it in the summer. There was one summer that my best month all year was actually in July. It wasn't even in December, November. It was in July. So, there is a possibility of that happening. It all depends on what you're selling. You know, how often you're selling, and part of that too is, how devoted are you to eBay in the summer? We'll talk about that here in a moment. But before we move on, so one thing that to definitely help you in the summer to kind of keep track of your numbers, see how you're doing based on, you know, the previous year or maybe the previous quarter is My Reseller Genie. My Reseller Genie has been a great tool that has been helpful for me and so many other resellers to be able to keep track, not only for taxes, but just to be able to keep track of our inventory as far as profit and loss. You know, I had to submit some forms to qualify for certain things. You know, I've been trying to find loans here and there and so on. And My Reseller Genie helped in that process, right? You know, there is QuickBooks and there's others, but there's only one that is really reseller friendly. And that is My Reseller Genie. So if you haven't signed up yet, go to the link below and use our code PUREHUSTLE, all caps, and get 15% off the first month. And by the way, Mike, next week, we must announce the winners for March and April, because there are two people that are supposed to get a free month here soon. So
yeah, let's get them. Let's get them their month, man. We're slacking on that. But you know who doesn't slack? My Reseller Genie, with getting you taken care of with your taxes.
True. All right. So I feel like we say this all the time, but there's no better time to sell your stuff than now. Don't wait till Q4. Don't wait till, you know, this language needs to go away. I think it applied at some point in time, but when people would always say you got to wait for the right buyer, I think the right buyer is the one that's offering you a decent amount of money, or the right buyer is the one that buys right now. Because you don't know. We don't know what this summer is going to have, right? You have no idea. So it's better to have that cash flow now. I would even say, you know, you may not get that extra, you know, $10, $20 you're hoping for, that $30. You know, maybe you have something listed for $100 and you wanted to sell it, you know, at the bottom was $75, but somebody offered you $65. I would say take it. Like, trigger the algorithm. Keep those sales flowing, because we don't know. We don't know how things are going to be in June. Maybe things will take off. It is an election year, and so the economy tends to do better, but we don't know. I don't know. What are your thoughts on selling out? Should people hold out for more, or should it just be fast nickel the whole way through?
I mean, it's tough. Like, again, if you're a full-time reseller, you need the money, right? Like, if you're a part-time seller and you don't necessarily need the money and you got some collectible things that are worth holding off on, it might be worth holding off on. But if you're full time, you need that money. And one of the reasons it's probably a good idea to get the money now, as opposed to waiting, is I feel like the summer is actually a really good time for sourcing. And mm-hmm. So having as much capital as possible. Now, if you're at a place where you built up a savings account, right? Like, the more you can treat your business like a business. And when you're first starting, you can't always do that. But if you can make it to the point where you kind of have a lot of capital sitting in a bank, not just for buying and sourcing, but to cover the slow months, right? If you want to say, like, hey, I need to average $8,000 a month, you know, net, or seven or six or whatever that number is for you in order to make ends meet, then there's going to be months where maybe you're making 12. And so what you do is, instead of spending all that, you throw some of that in a bank account and you wait until the slow month and you can kind of pull from that. So you always kind of, you look at your business as more of it on a yearly basis. So okay. If you're in that place, there might not be as much of a rush to say, hey, I need to be in the black, you know, making that number at that 6,000 or 8,000 in June, because I've got enough money still in savings from last Q4. So I'm going to kind of let that carry me through. And so then I'm not fire selling a lot of stuff that might be good things. However, that's not the case for most people. Like, that's like pie in the sky, end goal. Like, that's where most people should be aiming towards, is getting to a business model like that. And then in the process of getting there, you might have to fire sell in the summer so that you can have the capital so that you can buy and source and get those things that you need. Because for a good portion of the country, I mean, Orlando, you and I were like really, really blessed in San Diego when we were able to pretty much source garage sales year round. You know, for some people, that's not the case. Like, garage sale season opens up maybe in the spring through part of the summer, or maybe a little few weeks in the fall. It just depends, right? Like, every location is going to be different. So for some people, summer might be pretty much the only time they can get out to swap meets, and they can get out to more garage sales because the weather is finally nice enough to do those. So yeah, I would say if you're at a place where you don't already have the capital, you don't have the savings in the bank, yeah, it might be a good idea to sell the stuff now. Unless you can, if you're in a position where you could say, I know this is going to sell for twice as much in Q4, I don't need the money now. Yeah, it might be worth hanging off on, but that's going to be a case by case basis.
Yeah, I would say if you're full time, like, I think now has to be the time, just because I got to tell you, you know, you'd rather have that money in the bank in the summer than sit through a June. I sat through a June one time where sales were dismal. And I listed every day. I did promoted listings. I did everything. But I was grateful that I had sold a ton of stuff, you know, right after tax season in April, you know, going into March and going into May. And so even though things got kind of rough, I still had that cushion. Right. And so I would say just sell. I'm even today I had a decent offer on a Hawaiian shirt. It was a little less than I wanted. And I kind of, you know, I got a little bit arrogant and I was like, yeah, right. Like I you know, even though I would have I'm trying to think, it would have been like 30x my money. I still was like, nah, like you got to pay at least another $50. Should I have taken the sale? I probably should have taken the sale. Right. Because who knows when that person, somebody else is going to offer on that shirt. I had that shirt listed for about 6 months, one offer, and now I lost that sale. Right. So don't make that mistake. And I see your point. Like if you're part time, you can wait. I do agree with that. But I also would say if it's something that's been around for a while, and this is just doesn't even apply to what we're talking about. This is just overall. If you have something that's been sitting around for 6 months and you get some kind of action on it, just move it. You need to move it because it may be another 6 months. It could be another 6 years before somebody moves on that item. So definitely be careful on that. Now, I will say right now, I don't know, how has sourcing been going on for you when you've attempted? Has it been pretty easy out there?
I mean, it's definitely gotten easier. I feel like when I first started, I was a little bit concerned.
But that's just like understanding the location kind of.
Right, right. Yeah. But I'd say overall it's been okay. Yeah. I mean, it's maybe not as, there's less competition here than there was in San Diego, but there's fewer garage sales. So maybe net neutral as far as that goes.
Okay. See, I'm finding the opposite. I'm finding it's getting even more difficult to source right now. So my guess is that's probably going to constrain even more. I got to say, when I go to garage sales, over half of the garage sales I go to these days are resellers just trying to offload their inventory. And that's in San Diego. And you know how it is in San Diego. Any given Saturday, there's probably 300 garage sales going, right? So we're talking about, I mean, that's a huge number. I don't go to all 300, but let's say I pick, you know, 20 to go to. I end up finding out like close to 10 of them are some kind of reseller. Maybe they're not on eBay. Maybe they're swap meet. Maybe they just do local stuff. But in the end, like I'm finding it's more difficult. So if you can go out there right now, and these are like the summer, these are the pre-summer months where like the weather's perfect. The weather is perfect to source. And so I would source now. I would also source before like the economy begins to roll out worse numbers. So if unemployment, you know, the next unemployment report in June is worse and in July it's worse, or let's say, you know, inflation continues to go higher, that means that less people are going to have full-time jobs, and that means more people are going to be sourcing, which means that it's going to be even more difficult to source. Like the other day I was on social media and people were talking about how crazy crowded thrift stores are right now. Or you know, somebody was doing a church rummage sale and there was like a line around the block to go to the church rummage sale. And that's kind of becoming the reality. Even in San Diego, we never dealt with the East Coast estate sales. Like I see people on TikTok and Instagram when they go to estate sales, like there's people right at open and you have to like fill your name. You have to like sign a board and there's like 50 people at an estate sale. Here, I would say the most I ever encountered before this year was maybe 10 at one estate sale. Now, there could be 20, there could be 30 in estate sale, and you might have to wait in line, you have to sign things. So I think sourcing is going to get more difficult in the summer. Thrift stores, garage sales, maybe local deals will be the advantage that people can gain. But if you can source right now instead of waiting in the summer, because also you got to remember in the summer, people are going on vacation. People are taking off. Like it's not gonna. They're not gonna be thinking about running a garage sale. They're gonna be thinking about ways they can get away in the summer. So if there's ever a time to source, I would say no. All right. Hey, before we move on, real quick, thankful to all of you that continue to help here as a podcast. You know, from the ups and downs. You know, our podcast runs pretty much free unless we're able to get some kind of ads. So you'll hear ads sometimes on the podcast side, or we get ad revenue on the YouTube side. But sometimes it gets pretty scarce. And when those times get scarce, what helps us out is when people help us out on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/PureHustlePodcast or you go to the link below, for $5.55 a month, you can help out the podcast. And then part of that, you get to jump on the Discord. In our Discord, there's a whole bunch of resellers from Amazon that do retail arbitrage, that do wholesale, to eBay, to Depop, you name it, all kinds of different resellers. And love being in that community, love thriving with everybody there. So join us there. And as always, you can find us on all social media as Pure Hustle Podcast. We're also Pure Hustle Cast on X. And give us a call, 619-738-1170. That's 619-738-1170. Or shoot us an email at purehustlepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for all the iTunes reviews, the good and the bad, but I prefer the good more, and we're not going to go into them this week.
Hey, Rolando, why don't you do the phone number one more time, but a little slower.
Will I slurring?
A little fast on the...
619-738-1170. Give us a call.
All right. Yeah, well, we want to hear your voices, man. We love when we get our calls. And one of the things you might have noticed is I would say at least half of the calls we get end up on the podcast, right? We end up sharing a lot of our calls. We don't get very many calls. I think it's just the time we live in. Everybody wants to text. But we don't get a ton of phone calls. But when we get them and somebody leaves a voicemail, they often make it onto the podcast. So if you'd love to hear yourself on Pure Hustle Podcast, because we want to hear from you, go ahead and give us a call. And then we'll try and get you on there, as long as you're talking about something reselling related. And it is family friendly, because we are a family-friendly show here.
Okay. All right, let's talk about let's take a small break to talk about the wins from resellers.
Did we finish up the plan ahead part? Did you talk about that?
Did I just skip a whole thing on our notes?
That's okay. We can skip it. So real quick, before we move on to our hustle of the week, one of the things we can do this summer is planning ahead. And, you know, a lot of people are going to want to take vacations. You know, we talked about in a previous episode the importance of taking a break yourself. And so if you're going to be taking a vacation, you know, consider the different options you can do. You could do vacation mode. You can extend your handling time, which is typically what I end up doing, because you could still get sales. When you go on vacation mode, you're not getting those sales. But if you extend your handling time, you potentially can still get a sale, even if you've got a 7-day handling time now, because by the time you get home. So that's a useful thing. So plan that out. And then maybe even some listings if you've got some free time. If sourcing is too bad, if you can't get out to garage sales because it's just too hot in the summer, get those death piles listed. Get stuff taken care of. You know, you want to make sure you're staying active during the summer.
I will say one of the things that really helped when I would like travel in the summer and so on, I would create about, like, let's say it was a 5-day trip, I would create 50 drafts, right? So for each day I could pump out 10 listings, and it wouldn't take a lot of time. It would maybe take me, you know, because they're already drafts, maybe it would take me 15 to 30 minutes to get those drafts out. And they help you moving on with sales, because especially when you have a summer slowdown, the worst thing you want to do is you have a summer slowdown, you go on vacation and you do absolutely nothing. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't be doing absolutely nothing. You could do absolutely nothing. That's your prerogative. But if you are full time, like, you know how it is with eBay, like, you cannot leave eBay at home. Like, eBay must go on that cruise with you. eBay must travel to wherever you travel to. eBay must be at Disneyland with you. It's just the way it goes. That is the beast that is eBay. eBay is not passive. Amazon can be passive. You can do your FBA. You can get a whole bunch of FBA shipments. You can send them out before you leave on vacation. I've done that before, and it's been really nice. Maybe I'll do that this summer. I haven't done that in a while, send a whole bunch of FBA shipments. And that ends up being kind of passive too. But you definitely want to make sure your listings are intact. You want to make sure, you know, maybe plan out vacations, and so decide when you're going to source. Not on the vacations, but before you go, so you have inventory when you get back, because maybe you're not going to want to go out. Just, you got to figure out some kind of plan for the summer to be successful, because the worst thing that could happen to you is you reduce all activity on eBay or whatever platforms, and then the algorithm slows you down along with the summer slowdown and ends up being really difficult for you in the summer. All right, now we can talk about Hustle of the Week.
All right. And before we do the Hustle of the Week, I want to apologize again, man. I hear my chickens are really going crazy right now in the background. So if I'm not able to get them out on the podcast, thank you all for listening to the chickens in the background. Here we go.
Little chickadees.
Hustle of the Week. Come on, hustlers. It's the freaking Hustle of the Week. Yeah. All right. So our first hustle of the week comes from Mickey Meyer on the Discord. Okay. This will look weird to you guys because I'm from Switzerland and eBay is not really a thing here. There's an equivalent platform called Ricardo. Anyway, my wife found these two backpacks at the Salvation Army the other day. We paid their
Swiss francs. Those are Swiss francs.
Swiss francs, yeah. $29.80, which is equivalent to about $32.99 English, US dollars, for both of them. We ran an auction for both of them, and within 5 days, they sold. Both were EXPED Serac.
Yeah.
XPED?
Yeah.
XPED Serac 45 hiking backpacks, and they sold for 105 francs. And 110 francs. So that's a total of $238 in US money. Wow. That is quite a find. Holy cow. Yeah. I mean, from 30 bucks to 230 bucks, that's $200 in your pocket. And yeah, hiking backpacks. We've talked about those as bolos before. So I'm glad you picked those up because you can definitely do well. And I'm assuming too in Switzerland, there's a lot of people who do hiking and stuff in Switzerland. So I'm not surprised at all.
You're just stereotyping the population. Like everybody just has hiking backpacks in their houses.
Yeah, man. Don't you? I mean, I think so. And they carry Swiss cool Alps. Knives.
Yeah. And they eat amazing. Is it Swiss chocolate or is that Belgian chocolate?
And,
I don't know. Anyways,
and cheese.
I've had Swiss chocolate is top tier though. It really is top tier.
It's good. It's good stuff.
I have a friend of mine that come back from Switzerland with chocolate. No, and
maybe
really,
one day you and I, Orlando, will have a big enough bank account so we can end up with a bank account in Switzerland.
There you go. Well, wouldn't it be
just
cool?
Kidding.
I was thinking more of like it'd be cool to just source out there. Like I never would have thought in Switzerland there's a Salvation Army, right? And then why is that platform called Ricardo? Like, is it because of the owner was named Ricardo? He named it after himself. I think it's so cool. And on top of that somebody from our Discord is from Switzerland.
That is cool. So who is Craig and why does he have a list?
Yeah, I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know. I just think it's fantastic. The thing is with reselling, you know, we have listeners all over the world. We have listeners in Australia. We have listeners in Africa and Asia, like everywhere. And I always love hearing their stories, especially when it's not eBay related. Like, I think it's really cool because sometimes we think that eBay is the only platform in the world that people use, but there's plenty of other platforms that people use successfully there. All right, so this is from Kilowa from the Discord. I think they've had maybe two Hustle of the Week. And here's the thing. I am really into Godzilla because of my son. We spent the last year watching every single Godzilla movie. And I got to tell you, they have some great storylines. Some of them are kind of trippy, kind of weird. Like, you can see the eras, like the 60s Godzilla. Like, you can tell some people were on psychedelics. And then the 70s, it's kind of more like... kind of like disco-ish kind of feel. Like, it's kind of interesting. Anyways, you just got to watch and know what I'm talking about. But there's a huge following with Godzilla, and I understand it. And so this comes from Kilo from the Discord. Bought a bunch of plushes of Godzilla for a few bucks at a bundle at a swap meet just because they thought they looked cool. Finally decided to look them up. Huge bolos. So listed and sold overnight one of these plushes. Sold a 2004, okay, this isn't really old, 2004 Toy Vault Godzilla Origins Angurious plush for $250 plus ship. Okay, this is a plush. This isn't like, you know, some collectible like Godzilla. The plush is obviously collectible, but there's a huge following for Godzilla. So nice work there, Kilowa, buying. Again, we don't talk about sourcing at swap meet. Maybe I need to go. I don't know. I always feel like whenever I want to go to the swap meet, because I've had bad experiences, is that when I go, like, everybody knows how much things are worth. I'll never be able to get a good deal. But people find them all the time.
That's the case a lot of times. But it's like anything. Like, the more you go, the more you realize that there are the seasoned people who are there every week. And even some of them just want stuff to go, just like you. I mean, like, you'll take a really low offer a lot of times because you want things to move. But there's you'll learn to spot the people who are just there for a weekend or people who are, you know, a lot of times at the swap meet when I would go, there were people who would do estate sale cleanouts, I'm assuming is what they would do. And they'd bring in these big trucks with the stuff that they were like had left. So they probably took a lot of it to their, you know, thrift store, whatever they had, pawn shop. or eBay, and then they just had piles and piles of stuff that they were just like almost giving away for next to nothing because they don't want to take it to the dump. They want to get a little bit of that money back. Mm. So, yeah, you just need to know who those people are, and I think you could do really well at swap meets.
Okay, okay. We got to do it. Are there swap meets around you over in Texas?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, all right. We got the big one in San Diego, Kobe Swap Meet. Right, but you've been there, right? You've sold stuff there before.
Yeah.
I just find
not a Kobe. I bought a lot of Kobe, but I did mostly selling at Santee.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe one of these days I'll just go out there. Now, the question, I'll leave this out for the audience. Maybe this is local. Is it better to go to swap meet on the first day of the swap meet, or is it the third day or the second day? Like, does it matter? Right? Because usually swap meets, it's like over 2 or 3 days. Is it like estate sales? Like, you know, are there people that are there on Friday and they're willing to give you better deals on the Sunday? Or is it better to be there on the Friday because that's when the good stuff is still there? So let us know in the comments below. Unless Mike has an answer for that.
Nope, I don't.
Okay, all right, so you got this next hustle of the week here, Mike?
All right, our next hustle of the week comes from Seattle Rummage from our Discord, man. We got our Discord is on fire, man. That's one of the reasons we love our Discord.
These are only some of them. There's many.
That's good. You get so many good bolos from there, too. So it was fun digging these out of the attic and play the same game at home. TWE, is what it's supposed to say?
No, we're always learning. That was a typo. We're always learning. So, just go with it.
So Orlando makes me like Anchorman all the time. Like, I read the typos. I'm trying to like decipher what he really copy and paste. All right, so TWE are always learning. Okay, so we are always learning things on this reselling journey. And this was another. We knew some pottery in China already, but this just shows that there's no end to what people want, seek out, and pay money for. So they bought a box of China saucers for
I copied and pasted that, okay? That was okay. My title.
Saucers for a cost of goods of about $2.50 a piece. So sold a vintage Paragon Double Warrant White Gardenias on pink teacup and saucer for $610 plus shipping. Oh my gosh. That is wild.
Yeah.
$610.
Yeah. Especially because it's like China. You know what I mean? Like,
no.
I would say 90% of China is junk. Like, whenever you see it in a thrift store or a garage.
This is for one teacup and saucer?
Yes. Yeah. That's pretty good.
Holy smokes. That's
pretty good. So. But right, I mean, I remember in my early days I bought like I spent like $100 on a whole set, and it's still sitting in my garage. Like, I haven't listed it, I haven't done nothing with it because I don't want to deal with it. But yeah, and notice all of these, right? They're so different, right? The first one was hiking backpacks, the second one was plush, the third one was China. And that's the thing, like, there's so much opportunity. And you know, going along with our theme of the summer is like, just remember that there's all kinds of different sellers that are killing it. There are people that sell clothing that kill it. There are people that sell, you know, collectibles. There's people that sell China. There's all different kinds of stuff. All right, what is your hustle of the week, Mike?
So mine was actually a local deal. So I bought a while back. In fact, it was at a swap meet. It's funny we're talking about swap meets. I bought I don't even know what to call it. So I'm assuming it's for like Muay Thai or kickboxing, but it's like a vest that you would wear so that you can like get punched and stuff. Okay. But it's mostly, I imagine it's for the like instructors, right? So it's something that like an instructor would wear. Like, you know, sometimes they have the different pads. And so this pad, I didn't see a lot of comps on it on eBay. There were a couple of comps, I believe, because I listed this years ago. I want to say it was at least 2.5-3 years ago now that I picked this up, and I only paid like $5 for it. And so I listed it, I want to say for like $150, and I have had a handful of like lower offers on it. In fact, just a few weeks ago, I got a $75 offer on it, and I almost took it. But I had a couple people interested locally on it, and it was kind of big, and I could have packaged it, but I'm like, the couple of comps that I saw, this thing sold for closer to $150. So I ended up selling it locally for $100, which I'm glad I didn't take that $75 offer, because I would have had to have shipped it. I would have had to have dealt with all of the fees on that. It was probably a promoted listing. So a lot of times you get offers on things and you're messaging people and then you make the sale. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, I made less than I even thought because it was promoted listing. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad that I sold it locally. So yeah, it was one of those sales that was like $5 to $150 or not $150, $5 to $100. And it was a local deal. So it's cash just in my pocket. I don't have to worry about all those fees. And it justified the fact that I didn't take that $75 offer. We're only talking about $25 difference there. But once you factor in fees and the shipping and all that, I think it ended up being closer to maybe like a $40 difference. And yeah, and it finally paid off, right? The $5 purchase that I've kept in a box for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, again, if it's low cost, like it's okay to, and you're part-time, like it doesn't hurt to just hold on to it, you know? I'm glad we're getting to a place where we're kind of differentiating like what you should do with as a part-time seller and as a full-time seller. The only reason I say that is because I see it all the time on social media where like you get like people that are part-timers and they're killing it part-time and then they begin to like mock those that are full-timer, like, oh, you sold that too soon or you should have waited for more money. And then you go to their store and they have like 100 items, right? But then you go to the full-time person and they have like several thousand. And you're like, okay, so obviously this person needs to move this merch, right? And it's the same thing with you. Like I would have taken that offer, right? You spent $5 and somebody offered you $75. Like, that's great. What's that? I don't know. What is that? 25? No, that's not 25. It's 15X or something like that, right? It's a lot of X's, okay? It's a little bit, it's like 20-something X, okay? Whatever. I don't know what it is. It's somewhere in between there, okay? So you would have made good money, but the fact that you could sit on it a little bit, you could wait, like, hey, you know, that's what you need to do, okay? All right, so my hustle of the week, I got to tell you, I know everybody talks about sell-through rate all the time, but I don't think sell-through rate is everything. I think it's super important. I think you need to pay attention. But if you're able to find items and you're able to see why the sell-through rate is the way it is, you may be able to beat things. So I was the other day, I was looking, not the other day, like several months ago, I was going through a bunch of local deals. And one of them had a bunch of role-playing James Bond games from like the 70s and 80s. And these were basically, you know, games that, you know, they're role-playing games, right? So it's not like a board game. It's just there's a box and there's a bunch of sheets and people play characters and here's a secret envelope and you have to find out the confidential info and all this. And it was for like $75. And I always tell people, like, if you see something and you're not 100% sure, you're like, oh man, I'm not going to spend that much on it. Like, just put a, like, star it or save it and wait like 30 days. Because after 30 days, if they haven't sold it, you know, you may be able to sell it for, you may be able to source it for a lot lesser than people want. And I had looked at comps and I looked at if I sold one of these games, I could be in the profit already. So they had it up for $75. I offered $50 and they're like, sure, no problem. And so I went and it was kind of crazy. Like, this person, they had a full office building in San Diego, but it was just to store their toys. And I'm like, wow, okay. Like, we're talking about money here. Like, so, you know, and you know, I showed up and they were talking to me. They're like, hey, do you like sell full time on eBay? And I'm like, yeah, I sell all the time. And you know, in the early days of reselling, I probably would have been like, oh, every once in a while, you know, I kind of wouldn't share all that. But I've learned that whenever you share, your reseller, it works to your advantage. So when I said that, he goes, oh, that's great. You know, I have all these James Bond things here. But I know plenty of people that have tons of stuff, whether it be video games, whether it be baseball memorabilia, whether it be more James Bond stuff. And some of these, my friends, will just give it to you for free because they're just trying to make room or you know, they're in real estate and they'll purchase a house and they're trying to remodel the house and they don't want to toss everything. They want it to go to a good home. So I could give you a call. So I was able to leave my business card. Well, the profit, to me, was more in leaving my business card. Now, I haven't gotten a call back, but I got to tell you, whenever I get these calls back, they are usually big money. Usually it's like, oh, I have a friend who has a garage full of stuff. He wants to move some of the stuff, and I'll go, and it's like crazy amounts. And it could be Hot Wheels. It could be, you know, vintage toys from the 80s. It could be clothing. I've had this happen so many times. I mean, my biggest haul in reselling, my Hot Wheels haul, came as a result of this. Well, anyways, what did I buy? So I bought about 10 of these games at 55 a piece, and they were long tail. And I looked at, and why they were long tail was because people just had them priced high. So like one of them, they had listed for like $250. And I'm like, well, it's been there for, you know, over 90 days. I'm just going to list mine at 150. And sure enough, within a week, I sold it for 125. Right. So instantly I paid $50 for everything. And in one game, I was already in the profit. So with all said and done, I've made close to $400. So about 300 so net from this purchase, and I was able to get a connection with the business card. So if you haven't heard us say it enough, the best investment you can ever make in reselling is getting a business card, throwing your name out there. You just never know. I'll give you one more example. I know it's not, but this last Saturday I was going to garage sales. Should have put this in the update, but went to garage sales, didn't find much. I go to this house, there's a whole bunch of baseball bats. I'm like, why hasn't anybody bought these? Because, you know, you get one baseball bat, like if it's a Marucci or if it's a DeMarini, like you're in the profit if you're buying these bats for anywhere between 20 to 40. Anyways, bought a whole bunch of bats. And then I asked the question. I said, hey, do you have any more baseball stuff? He's like, do I? Like, I run a travel baseball team. All of our parents have a ton of baseball bats and baseball gloves that we're just trying to offload. You know what? Leave me your number. Give me your business card and we'll give you a call. And then we'll just have the team put together all their equipment and we can just make one big bulk buy. I was like, what? Like, that's crazy, right? Never thought about doing that. So if you guys are out there, you know, maybe it wouldn't hurt to go to some baseball game and just throw out your business card and see what you can get by doing that. So I can tell you this. The people I know that are really successful at reselling, they've thought out of the box when it comes to sourcing. And they don't go to thrift stores. They don't go to garage sales for all their stuff. They have found a way to network and get their name out there. And their best deals end up being from that networking, not from going to the thrift store every day, not from going to garage sales, not from doing local deals. It's been these huge connections they've had. So I encourage everyone to do that.
That's good stuff. All right.
So summer. Let's get back to summer. Let's talk about worst case scenario. This is why we leave it towards the end. In case people would have checked out earlier.
Worst case.
All right. So what do you think are some ways to get that quick revenue? Let's say sales are super slow and you have no revenue coming in and you need that revenue.
I mean, there's a few things you can do. I mean, one of the things we already talked about, swap meets, and you know, I've done my own garage sales even as a reseller, is you can kind of offload some of that extra inventory, right? Because we all have death piles. And we all have items we've listed that might be kind of bringing down our store, the sell-through rate of our store even. You know, if we've got a lot of items that are gone stagnant, they're not selling, sometimes it's worthwhile to clean out some of that space and do your own garage sale or go to the swap meet and kind of offload a lot of that stuff. Now, it is some work because you got to make sure that you've delisted all of the items that you're trying to sell or that they're items that you haven't listed already. But you can definitely do some quick sales that way. It's just a fast way of getting cash in hand. And then, like I said, even potentially making more room, you know, if you've got more room than you got space to put that death pile, and maybe in that death pile, you have good stuff that you really should be listing because that stuff will sell now. So it kind of becomes a win-win. And then really another thing you could do, and this doesn't work for everybody, but, if you could start building a whatnot, you know, platform or following now, then if you get to a place where you kind of need to fire sell some stuff, you're pretty much guaranteed to sell things on whatnot. Now, you might be selling things for a lot less than you would be selling them on eBay. But again, if you're looking for that quick cash, you want to make money now, that would definitely be one of the options that you can do in order to turn those products that are just sitting there and collecting dust and potentially losing value over time. Some items go up, but a lot of them just go down. Get that cash now because cash is worth more today than it will be tomorrow. That's just the nature of fiat currency.
That's very true. And again, with whatnot, it may take a lot of work, but if you get to the 1,000 sales, which takes a lot of work, you know, a lot of sourcing, a lot of selling, you get payment by the next day, right? It's like the old school days of PayPal when PayPal used to be with eBay. And I've heard people like even say, you know, I had my car broke down. I needed quick money. I did a whatnot. I sold enough to get my car repaired the next day. And there you have it. So you may find yourself in that crunch in the summer. And so get yourself ready now. And again, I know a lot of people, you know, go back and forth, whatnot. I obviously stopped my sales because I didn't find it was worth it to me on the hour by hour. I might go back to it. But, you know, what I did like about it was, yeah, if I had inventory that I had for a while and I just wanted that quick money, and if my cost was super low, I was still profitable. Why not sell it? Why not make that deal? And, you know, I will say it's interesting with, you know, you had talked about the swap meet. Like, you did really well that one time, right? Didn't you go to the swap meet?
I did really well one time. I did really poorly another time. Okay. You know, it's up and down sometimes. Kind
what
of
was the difference?
Just do okay. I think it was just the inventory that I brought. I found, like, electronics, certain types of electronics, video games, that kind of stuff do a lot better at swap meets. Furniture actually can do pretty well at swap meets. But again, it's got to be the stuff people are looking for. You know, I've had times where I've taken some furniture and nobody wants to touch it, and I've had times where I can't even get it out of the car before people are buying stuff. So I think it just depends on. It's like anything. It's like eBay, right? But like on eBay, your store, you might have 1,000 items. If you're bringing 100 items, you're bringing 50 items to a swap meet. Are those the 50 items people are looking for? You know, so it just kind of depends.
No, I get it. All right, now this is one that people do not like hearing, but it's best to maybe have another income stream, right? I say this all the time because, you know, I want people to understand, like, if you are full time and it's not working, right, that money's not coming in, it doesn't hurt to pick up maybe something you do twice a week, or maybe something you decide to go full time for the summer, like just for the summer. Maybe you get that summer job. There's no shame in that. You know, it's best that you take care of your family than try to, you know, appease whoever and try to go, oh, I'm a full time reseller, I'm going to make it happen.
I mean, honestly, like even as, and again, like you even mentioned like the no shame thing, because sometimes, you know, again, as a reseller, you feel like you have to make it with just this. But, you know, both you and I are educators, you know, we're both teachers, and it is not uncommon. It's kind of sad in some ways that this has to be the case, but it's not uncommon at all for teachers to get jobs over the summer, you know, whether it's just a part-time job working somewhere, whether it's picking up some tutoring, whether it's working summer school, something outside of your normal contract. You're doing different work, but you're just trying to make a little bit of extra money because you have the time, because summer is, you know, you're not working your normal job. And if reselling dips enough that if you used to be able to put in 40 to 60 hours a week reselling, but in the summer, you're not moving that much inventory and you don't have as much capital you know, flowing to be spending sourcing that much, then yeah, move some of that time somewhere else. And like, I'll give you another example to kind of show like where the economy is in some ways, but even something you can do. There have been times like my wife and I, like we're trying to do something. My son's had some medical bills that came up. We had the issue with my car, various things. We got a vacation coming up, and I live in a small town, and there are, I think, 4 places that you can donate plasma to. And it's, you know, when I started doing it, it was $120 a week. And it's just, you know, a couple hours a week and you're playing on your phone the whole time. You could be doing listings. So, I mean, there's ways if you're like, hey, I need an extra $400, $500 a month. Now, going back to that idea of where the economy's at, when I first started doing that, just to make a little bit of extra money here and there, you know, you sign up, you get a bonus, an extra $800 your first 10, you know, times you go or something like that. They were giving $120 a week. That was kind of their rate, $120 a week. You could donate twice a week to make that money. But that number fluctuates depending on their supply, how much they need. And over the last several months, that number dipped down to 110, then 100, and then for a little bit there it was 90, which tells me they have so many people coming in donating. Well, why that uptick? Why the uptick of people going in donating? I think it's because times are hard, right? So, again, it's one of those things where my wife and I know between the two of us, we could pull in an extra $800 to $900 a month donating plasma if the crud hit the fan. You know what I mean? Like if it was like really bad and it's like, we need to pay this thing, or we don't have the money, you can get the money, right? So there's always things you can do to make extra money. And yeah, it kind of stinks that teachers sometimes have to donate plasma or get a summer job. But if an educated teacher can do that, then so can anybody, right? Like there's no shame in saying, hey, I got some free time and maybe you'll find something else you enjoy. Like I really have learned, I've enjoyed working with my hands. So maybe one of these summers I'll get a job working on a farm or something, just because why not? Like, make a little bit of extra money and do something different, because you might find you enjoy something else. So.
Yeah, no, for me, it's, you know, my background's in education. So I haven't had to yet, but I, you know, even during the regular school year, I still teach, you know, a homeschool co-op, and that brings an extra stream of income. And, you know, I will say the last two summers when things were bad, the ability to have that money already on the side because the money I had made previous hand definitely helped out. Right. So fine. You know, a lot of you that have gone full time, you were good at something before. So find a way to just monetize it. And it doesn't have to be in a big way. You know, I always joke around with my son who took all these AP classes. Like, when I taught AP, I had a consistent 100% pass rate. So I know exactly how to, like, grade AP exams. I know what, you know, the College Board is looking for. And so I've had people in the past hire me to tutor them for like 2 or 3 hours, grade some essays. And, you know, I forget what I charged. I think it was like $65 an hour or whatever at that point in time. It's been a while. It's been a few years. But find what you're good at and do that side hustle to help you temporarily at that point in time. Because again, the last thing we want to end on is the idea is, like, make a plan to hold on to reselling, in the, you know, throughout the summer. Because I do think good times are coming. I don't know what that's going to look like, but I do think by the time we get to November and into Q1 of 2025, I do think things are going to rebound. I you know, things have been kind of rough for like 3 or 4 years. I think most people would agree that, you know, reselling was really good up until 2019, and it was really, really good in 2020 because, you know, we're all dealing with a scenario where we couldn't leave our homes. And then things have just been a slide down ever since then. But, you know, people's buying habits change, you know, different policies change the way the economy goes. And my hope is that we'll rebound. So if you can hold on, you know, what is it right now? It's May, right? So we got May, June, July, August, September, October. So you can hold on for 6 months, 6 months. Now we're just talking about summer, because I do think it's only going to be 3 months, because I think once, you know, we get into late August, September, we're going to start seeing Q4 sales slowly pick up. Okay, because remember, people are buying earlier. We've talked about this. We've been doing this podcast for 6 years, and it seems that every year Q4 comes even sooner, right? So just hold on to the summer. Make that plan, whether that plan be getting a second job, whether that plan being, you know, selling everything you can right now so you're capital heavy and you can source in the summer, whether that plan be, you know, you deciding to, hey, you know what? In June, I'm going to run a garage sale the first of the month, and in July and in August, or I'm going to get my whatnot ready to go. Whatever it is, make sure you have a plan. Don't just go into July. I mean, not even July. Don't just go into June just hoping that, you know, sales will just start rebounding. Make a worst case scenario plan to make sure you're ready to carry yourself into Q3. And as Jamie Ioanni said of eBay, you know, he hopes that, you know, we'll see more growth going into Q3 and going into Q4. Hey, hopefully this episode helped you out a lot. You know, just understand, like, reselling always rebounds. Things aren't always in a downward slope. There are times that people want certain things and people will buy. So keep on getting out there. Keep hustling. Keep making reselling a reality for you. And with that being said, make sure you be real.
Be relevant.
And be reselling, ladies.
Peace.